This episode of The Breakthrough is sponsored by Scribd. When you join Scribd, you'll get monthly access to the best books, audiobooks, news, and magazines all in one app. Listeners of The Breakthrough can read and listen for free for 60 days. Just visit scribd.com/ProPublicaPodcast. That's scribd.com/ProPublicaPodcast.
Chief Robert Lewis, WNYC.
Mr. Lewis, you know the rules. You got to call DCPI.
This is your personal finances.
You got to call DCPI.
You're authorized to talk about it.
No, I'm not. So they tell me.
Why did you buy a loan shark's property from his family while the NYPD was investigating it?
Call DCPI, please.
I will, but why did you buy a property from a missing loan shark?
Like I said, call DCPI, please.
Will you speak? If DCPI says you can talk, will you speak?
This sort of confrontation isn't what you normally hear on public radio. That's WNYC's Robert Lewis tracking down a chief in the New York City Police Department. The police chief seemed to have a suspicious side business, and Robert wanted to know the details. What he uncovered led to an internal investigation of the NYPD. Welcome to The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica where investigative journalists reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. I'm Joaquin Sapien. In New York, police officers can supplement their salaries with side jobs and businesses. In the series NYPD Inc., WNYC crime reporter Robert Lewis looked into these side gigs, and he found that top-ranking officers are doing a lot more than moonlighting as security guards. He uncovered some officers' outside dealings that may even conflict with the department's own interests. It all started with a federal investigation into officers receiving gifts and bribes from local businessmen.
There was a giant corruption scandal within the NYPD and within the city that sort of broke in spring last year. I was actually on paternity leave when all of this happened. And so I was reading of it, you know, while I was home. And when I came back to work, my editor sort of gave me that, you know, impossible task of, hey, get us caught up, do something smart. And so then, what do I do?
At the core of the investigation were these disclosure forms that top-ranking cops have to fill out if they make money outside of the police department.
And I just found myself wondering, like, does anyone actually look at these forms regularly? If these stories were just sitting there buried in the forms waiting to be pulled, what else was in these forms? What else was being reported? And it was a simple question, and so I just sort of set out to see, well, maybe I can look at all of the forms for the NYPD over a period of time, and that's what really launched the whole project.
And that proved challenging just to obtain them, from what I understand. You sort of had to – it took you a little while to get them, and then you had to tediously go through them one by one. Talk about that process.
Well, the system that's set up seems willfully opaque. You know, usually when you're asking for public records, you can submit, say, a public records request saying, I would like all of this form. Well, within the City Conflicts of Interest Board, you can't request all the forms with one letter. They actually make you request each individual person's form that you want on a separate form. You have to fill out a separate special form saying, I want John Smith's form. I want Joe Smith's form, And I got the first early batch of forms. So I had originally put in a request for like 30 forms, and I got like 29 of them. And I had requested forms for an assistant chief who's the head of he's the patrol borough commander for Staten Island. And they said, oh, you know, we're going to hold off on giving you Assistant Chief Edward De La Torre's form because he has requested confidentiality. So immediately, you know, fairly or unfairly, red flags went up, alarm bells went off, said, well, why is this guy requesting confidentiality? So I get his form. He had like 15 properties listed on there, and the addresses were redacted. And so that was one of those like fun challenges where I was like, well, can I figure out what this guy owns? And then I wanted to know, you know, who did he purchase them from? And if he sold any, who did he sell them to?
So Robert scours these forms, looking up names that aren't redacted.
One of the first properties I looked up, he had gotten a property that had belonged to a man named Vincent Durso. Google Vincent Durso, and the first thing that pops up in your Google search is, oh, some guy named Vincent Durso went missing and the NYPD was investigating the disappearance. And so, you know, first you're like, oh, my God, this, I can't be this lucky on a reporting standpoint. This is ridiculous. No way this is the same guy. Of course, it was the same guy, and it proved to be a fruitful strain of reporting.
So Robert takes off. He starts digging. He drives to buildings this guy Durso used to own. He's looking up court records, trying to find anything he can about how and why a police chief is connected to this missing guy.
What I found out was that, this guy was a devoted family man, also a small-time loan shark, basically, had gone missing. He was known to carry large amounts of cash and had never been found. And while he's missing, and while it's an open case, you know, NYPD is still investigating, this man's daughter, you know, grieving daughter, trying to care for mom, sells it below market to the chief.
Robert calls Chief Della Torre to get an explanation. The chief doesn't call back. Robert leaves messages and calls again and again.
And I had reached out to him numerous times trying to get him to sort of talk. I really wanted to hear his explanation for these deals, get the thought process. He refused. He wouldn't talk to me. I reached out to everyone involved in every level of this, the attorneys, the real estate brokers, nobody would go on the record and talk about this. And so I went out to one of these buildings that he owns. I mean, it's a fairly nondescript office building on East Tremont in the Bronx. On the second floor, Assemblyman Michael Benedetto has his office. Obviously, rents space from the chief Della Torre. And then on the first floor, you sort of the awning suggests that it's a real estate company. And so I duck into the space where this real estate office / local newspaper is located. And I'm really at this point thinking, like, I'm just trying to get a message to him. Like, I just want him to know that I'm really serious about getting his side of the story. And so I go in and I go up to the woman, you know, working the desk, and I say, you know, this is kind of probably a ridiculous question, but does Chief Della Torre, do you ever see him here? Is he ever come by? I'd love to get a message to him. She's like, oh, yeah, he's in Beck. At which point, you know, I my heart jumps into my throat and I'm like, do you mind telling him that I'd love to talk to him? I'm, you know, Robert Lewis, WNYC. And at which point I'm, you know, getting my recorder sort of ready, hoping that we'll get something, do an interview. I mean, I want to do an interview with him at this point. His assistant came out and said, you need to leave.
You have to ask me to leave?
And so I said, well, you know, why do I need to leave? Like, he's busy. Well, you know, is he going to be free later? I don't know. So he might be free later. Well, maybe. I don't know. So, you know, we had this sort of back and forth a little bit. And you know, if they're telling me to leave, I have to leave. But I'm, you know, certainly trying to
not going
press. Right. I'm trying to press the case a little bit. She walked out of the building, I believe, and sort of around the corner. So she's sort of like double parked in this SUV out front. And he's coming out, and I'm like,
Chief Robert Lewis, WNYC.
I mean, he knows who I am. I've been trying to get him for weeks.
Mr. Lewis, you know the rules. You got to call DCPI.
Which is sort of a bizarre, ridiculous
statement.
Like,
yeah, that's why I'm here. I'm supposed to get you to talk.
Right.
To me.
I mean, to me, the rules are you are a very powerful public official, and you should be answering questions, you know, legitimate questions in the public interest. He meant rules are, you know, how dare you speak to a police chief, not through the press office. So, you know, I say to him, and I had talked to the press office.
This is your personal finances.
You got to call DCPI.
You're authorized to talk about it.
No, I'm not. What, until they tell
why
me.
Why did you buy a loan shark's property from his family while the
Excuse
NYPD
me.
Was investigating it?
Call DCPI, please.
I will, but why did you buy a property from a missing
like
loan
I
shark?
Like I said, call DCPI, please.
Will you speak? If DCPI says you can talk, will you speak?
And he got in the car and slammed the door. It was my Mike Wallace moment, and we don't really do that in public radio. And I did talk to DCPI, and they did say he can speak about his own affairs, and he did not talk to me. You know, I reached out again trying to say, look, I still want to do a sit-down interview where you have a full opportunity to sort of talk through why you did what you did, you know, why what I'm looking at here is why I'm looking at it the wrong way. Like, I wanted to hear that, but he never took that opportunity.
So the first two stories air. The first one lays out everything Robert found in those disclosure forms, the myriad ways that New York police officers make money on the side, and the fact that some of these side dealings seem ethically murky. The second radio story zeroes in on Della Torre, telling the story of how the police chief ended up buying two properties at below market rate from the family of a missing loan shark, all while the NYPD was investigating the man's disappearance. It's an explosive story. After they air, Robert gets a tip. Someone who lived in Della Torre's buildings calls him and says,
"You know, you should look into the living conditions at this one particular apartment building of the chief." And so I thought, oh, well, you know, it's something I never really even paid attention to. I hadn't looked into the building code violations, and this person was sort of, you know, suggesting they weren't up to snuff.
And sure enough, there were violations.
I was like, oh, well, that's interesting, this one building. And I said, well, maybe I'll look at the other buildings that he owns or is connected to. And I don't use the city's building information system, the online database, all that often. So I'm not super fluent in it.
He's looking for any documents filed during the time when Della Torre owned the building. But
I had actually misread a column.
And this was Robert's second unexpected break.
So I click on this document that if I'd known better, I wouldn't have clicked on. And I'm scrolling to the bottom. And at the bottom, it says owner information. And the name listed is Dominic Sicali.
Robert didn't know the name Dominic Sicali. But he thought, great, maybe this was the chief's partner. So, like with Durso, he Googles Dominic Sicali.
And immediately, the first thing that pops up is a Daily News article saying that a mob turncoat, Dominic Sicali, has pleaded guilty to murder and is testifying against his old boss, the acting boss of Bonanno crime family, Vincent Bassiano, Vinny Gorgeous.
So now you've got this police chief who bought a building from a missing loan shark, and you find out he might also be connected to a mobster?
I was sort of stunned, right? I feel like so often in as a reporter in this type of reporting or any type of reporting, you pull at some thread and you think like, oh, maybe there's something at the end of it, and there's never anything at the end of it. It is never there.
But this time there was.
And so that sort of kicked off months of additional reporting, trying to figure out who are some of these, you know, mobsters, what's their background, how are they connected, how are they involved.
The trial of these mobsters was back in the mid-2000s, so Robert had a lot to catch up on. But he also wanted to make sure he wasn't missing anything. So he starts going back over Della Torre's properties, looking again to see who he bought them from. And he sees Della Torre purchased a couple of properties from this bank, a small savings bank in the Bronx called Ponce de Leon Federal Bank.
So not only was I dealing with sort of the mob element, but then I had to figure out, well, what role did this bank play in everything? And because the explanation that Chief Della Torre's attorney, who by this point had communicated with me, the explanation that he was sort of giving me was, look, these were arm's length transactions done with the bank, not with the mobsters. And so that raised the immediate question, well, what's the deal with this bank? And so that sent me down a whole new rabbit hole where I was looking, you know, I ended up looking at every mortgage and every loan, rather, that the bank made from 2000 to 2005. So you have these discussions with your editors all along the way of when you're going to pull the trigger, when you're going to keep digging. You know, I was able to go down some rabbit holes, probably because my editor was a little distracted at points or would just start to go down them and tell him after the fact, like, oh, I happened to go through all 400 loans they made from 2000 to 2005, which he probably never would have been into had I said at the front end, do you think I should go through 400 loans? He probably would have said, no, that is a colossal waste of time. It was a tremendous amount of work just trying to sort of, you know, close the circle. I believe I found that at least 40 of these 400 some loans went to people or entities, properties associated at least loosely with the mob. That includes half of those, which were actually signed for by people at some point either prosecuted or sued by the government for a role in organized crime.
Robert's meticulous search through hundreds of loans led to another story about how Della Torre's wife heads a company that bought properties from a bank that had made a lot of loans to mob-related businesses. And for a few months, a mob-owned construction company was on the hook for $650,000 in bad loans to Della Torre's wife. Yeah, it might not be terribly surprising that you would find evidence of the mob's presence in New York real estate, but that they would be so closely linked to members, active members of the police department, it's a little bit of a surprise.
I certainly found it to be a surprise. And certainly, I mean, I think the question, you know, I've had a lot of people sort of on the PD side, and certainly Dellatore's attorney sort of shrug and say, well, you know, what's wrong? They're investors. You know, they just picked up these properties. He never interacted with the mob. What's wrong with that? And that may be true, but, you know, that's the thing about conflicts of interest, right? Like the appearance of a conflict of interest, or the appearance of a potential conflict of interest, is also a big deal because it can undermine the trust in an institution.
Well, it's really a great run of reporting and an awesome story. Inspired two investigations, one within the police department, one from DOI. Quite an accomplishment there. And then it won a George Polk Award. So congratulations, and thanks for coming in to tell us about it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
That was WNYC crime reporter Robert Lewis. The investigations his reporting sparked are still ongoing, so keep your ear out for Robert's stories on WNYC. Next week on The Breakthrough, I'll talk with my colleague Michael Graybell about the dangers undocumented immigrants face when they take jobs in U.S. chicken factories.
An attorney told me that every time he goes back to his hometown in Mexico, that the only people who are left in the village are women with small children, the elderly, and America's injured workers.
That's next week. You've been listening to The Breakthrough, the podcast from ProPublica where investigative journalists reveal how they nailed their biggest stories. Our theme music was composed by Mural and Tony. Our producer is Ashley Cleek. Sarah Brooke Curtis is our engineer. Ibi Caputo edited this episode. Celeste Lecomte is our executive producer. And I'm Joaquin Sapien. Thanks for listening.
Stay in the know and feed your curiosity with access to everything worth reading. The Breakthrough listeners can read free for 60 days. Just visit scribd.com/ProPublica podcast.